Chapter 19, Leadership Lesson 3, Integrity Matters, The Foxhole Test. The colonel apologized for being a few minutes late for the meeting. He was dealing with an incident, as he called it. An imposing figure, he was every bit a Marine. Posture as straight as a 2x4, broad shoulders, slim waist, his uniform perfectly pressed and worn with pride. His head held high, he oozed confidence. As the officer in charge of the Marine Corps Officer Candidate School, or OCS, in Quantico, Virginia, he took his responsibility very seriously. Though technically a school designed to train the officer corps, OCS, the Marines will tell you, is more of an officer selection process. It's hard to get thrown out of boot camp, basic training for enlisted Marines. But if someone doesn't meet the standards to be a leader of Marines at OCS, then they won't become an officer. Simply wanting to be a leader and being willing to work hard is not enough. Unlike in the private sector, where being good at doing is often rewarded with the position of leading, in the Marines, leadership is also a matter of character, not just strength, intelligence, or achievement. On this particular day, something had happened with one of the officer candidates that warranted the attention of the colonel. In fact, it was so serious that they were considering throwing the candidate out of OCS altogether. My curiosity bubbling, I asked what the candidate had done that could potentially end his career as an officer in the Marine Corps. It must have been pretty serious. I wondered what crime he had committed. "He fell asleep on watch," said the colonel. "That's it?" I asked. "You guys are stricter than I thought." "This guy fell asleep. He wasn't in combat. He didn't put any lives at risk. He fell asleep in the woods of Virginia." "And that's enough to end his career?" I thought to myself. "It has nothing to do with his falling asleep," said the colonel. When we asked him about it, he denied it. When we asked him about it again, he denied it again. Only when we showed him irrefutable proof did he say, "I'd like to take responsibility for my actions." "The problem we have," said the colonel, "is that taking responsibility for one's actions must happen at the time you perform your actions, not at the time you get caught." He went on to explain that in the Marine Corps, trust and integrity are considered matters of life and death. If this would-be leader were put in charge of a platoon of Marines, and those Marines could not completely trust that the information their officer was giving them was the truth, good, bad, or indifferent, then the Marines might hesitate, question the officer's decisions, or fail to pull together as a team. And when that happens, when we cannot trust the very people who are supposed to be responsible for us, bad things occur. In the case of the Marines, this means people could die. If Marines told to obey their officer suspect for a second that that officer would avoid the truth or not take responsibility for their actions simply to cover their own tail or make themselves look better, then the circle of safety shrinks and the entire fabric and efficacy of the group of Marines decays. The Marines are as good as they are, not simply because they are big, strong, and fearless. They are also good at what they do because they trust each other and believe, without a doubt, that the Marine to the left of them and the Marine to the right of them, regardless of rank, will do what needs to be done. This is the reason Marines are so effective as a group. The same is true in every organization, even ones in which the decisions are not a matter of life and death. When we suspect the leaders of a company are saying things to make themselves or the company look better than they are, or to avoid humiliation or accountability, our trust in them falters. This is a natural response. Our brain interprets the information we receive with our survival in mind. If we suspect our leaders are bending the truth to favor their own interests, then our subconscious mind prefers we don't climb into a foxhole with them. Another Marine also fell asleep during the same exercise at OCS. He owned up to it immediately and was given an appropriate punishment. From a leadership perspective, the Marines have no problem with him. He made a mistake, and that's fine. He was honest and took responsibility for his actions immediately. Leadership, the Marines understand, is not about being right all the time. Leadership is not a rank worn on a collar. It is a responsibility that hinges almost entirely on character. Leadership is about integrity, honesty, and accountability. all components of trust. Leadership comes from telling us not what we want to hear, but rather what we need to hear. To be a true leader, to engender deep trust and loyalty, starts with telling the truth. How not to build trust. Integrity, said the CEO, is the bedrock of our foundation. According to Merriam-Webster's Collegiate Dictionary, integrity means a firm adherence to a code of especially moral or artistic values. This means that operating with integrity is sometimes a higher standard than operating within the confines of the law. Incorruptibility is the word offered as a synonym. Integrity is more than a word written on a wall with all the other company values. It is the reason we trust one another, the bedrock of trust, to use the CEO's choice of words. We need to know that the information given to us by others, and especially our leaders, good or bad, is the truth. We need to know that when someone says something, they mean it. If we doubt their integrity, then we cannot trust them with our lives or the lives of those we love. If we doubt someone's integrity, we would hesitate before jumping into a foxhole with them. The integrity of those in our community is, as our brain perceives it, a matter of life and death. As humans, as social animals, we are hardwired to constantly assess the information people give us and the actions they perform. It is a constant and ongoing process. We do not trust someone after they tell us just one thing, even if it is the truth. Trust evolves once we have enough evidence to satisfy our brain that a person or an organization is indeed an honest broker. This is the reason integrity, for it to work, must be a practice and not simply a state of mind. Integrity is when our words and our deeds are consistent with our intentions. A lack of integrity is at best hypocrisy and at worst lying. The most common display of a lack of integrity in the business world is when the leader of an organization says what others want to hear and not the truth. This is the reason we don't trust politicians. Though we may sit down with a list of statements a politician has made and agree with every single one of them, the reason we tend not to trust them is because we suspect that they don't believe all the things they are saying. We don't even agree with everything our close friends and family say or believe, so it stands to reason that if a politician is in perfect alignment with us, that they are not being completely honest. Politicians spend time on the road shaking hands and learning about us when they are campaigning. But if they really cared about us, then they would spend time shaking hands and meeting us all year round, and not just when it suited their agenda. Ron Paul, a 2012 presidential candidate, held opinions that were not popular with the country. Yet he was much more trustworthy than almost all the other candidates because he was willing to express those opinions, knowing full well that they would not get him elected. Moreover, those opinions were consistent with things he said in the past. I do not agree with Ron Paul on many issues and would not vote for him. Yet, I would be more likely to trust him in a foxhole than I would some of the people I do vote for. All for one reason. He has integrity. Integrity is not about being honest when we agree with each other. It is also about being honest when we disagree, or even more important, when we make mistakes or missteps. Again, our need to build trusting relationships as our social brain sees things is a matter of life and death, or in the case of our modern Western lives, a matter of feeling safe, secure, and protected versus feeling isolated and vulnerable. We need people to admit when they falter and not try to hide it or spin the story in an attempt to protect their image. Any attempt at spin is self-serving, and such a selfish motivation can do damage to our group should danger present itself. This is not a complex idea. For leaders, integrity is particularly important. We need to trust that the direction they choose is in fact a direction that is good for all of us and not just good for them. As members of a tribe, who want to feel like we belong and earn the protection and support of the group, we will often follow our leaders blindly with the belief or hope that it is in our interest to do so. This is the deal we make with our leaders. We in the group will work hard to see their vision become a reality, and they will offer us protection along the way, which includes honest assessments and commentary. We need to feel they actually care about us. It's just like that CEO said. Integrity is the bedrock of our foundation. Michael Duke, the Chief Executive Officer, President, Director, and Chairman of the Global Compensation Committee, and Chairman of the Executive Committee of Walmart. Yes, that's his full title, told shareholders. Our culture is who we are. It isn't just words written on the wall at the home office or stapled to the bulletin board in the back room of the store, he went on. It sets us apart from the competition, and it appeals to people everywhere. So wherever we go and whatever changes we make, we must keep our culture strong. I truly believe that the retailer that respects individuals, that puts customers first, that strives for excellence, that is trusted, will win the future. I admire leaders who believe in the value of culture. I respect leaders who put people first. And I have deep loyalty to those who believe integrity is the bedrock of an organization. These beliefs are the makings of a very strong culture, one in which the people are committed to one another and to the organization. A people-first attitude and a commitment to integrity are at the core of the United States Marine Corps culture, and they drive decisions at Barry Waymiller, even if they don't issue press releases that say so. How are we to feel, then, when Duke says at the same shareholders' meeting, where he talked about integrity, that his number one priority is growth? I thought it was customers. Does that mean that culture, defined as the aggregate of the common values and beliefs of a group of people, is just a list of things written on the wall? According to Walmart's 2011 proxy statement, Duke made $18.1 million that year. What the proxy statement doesn't reveal is that the company had changed the manner in which Duke's bonus was calculated. For many years, the CEO's bonus was based on same-store sales, but the board that Duke chairs changed the criterion to overall sales, an easier goal to hit. It turns out that the same-store sales had been in decline for 2 years, which would have hurt Duke's compensation. With the rule change, his performance evaluation could take advantage of overall revenues, a number heavily buoyed by Walmart International. Jackie Goebel, a Walmart employee from Kenosha, Wisconsin, like Duke, is given an annual bonus based on company performance. In 2007, her bonus, which was based on same-store sales, was more than $1,100. But unlike Duke's, her bonus structure was not changed, and as a result, in the same year Duke earned $18.1 million, Ms. Goebel was given $41.18. The rules were changed not to benefit everyone in the organization, just the guy at the top. Despite the fact that the priorities Mike Duke and the board expressed to one group do not appear to be the priorities they expressed to another group, and even though they seem to act in a manner completely opposite to the definition of integrity, it is not entirely their fault. The problem is that they only learned about the impact their decisions have on others from reading numbers on spreadsheets. This is one of the side effects of destructive abundance. When operating at such scale, how can they possibly be expected to extend the circle of safety beyond themselves and other senior executives, the people they actually know? When our leaders operate under such conditions of abstraction, they will naturally work to prioritize their own interests over those of others. Inner circles take precedence over wider circles of safety. Not only that, but an example is set for the rest of the company as well. When leaders take steps to protect their own interests, particularly when those steps are taken at the expense of others, they send a message to everyone else that it's okay to do the same. This is where Duke can and should be held accountable for the decisions that call his integrity into question. The leaders of companies set the tone and direction for the people. Hypocrites, liars, and self-interested leaders create cultures filled with hypocrites, liars, and self-interested employees. The leaders of companies who tell the truth, in contrast, will create a culture of people who tell the truth. It's not rocket science. We follow the leader. Between 2005 and 2009, the general manager of Ralph Lauren's Argentinian subsidiary, along with some of his employees, had been regularly paying bribes to government officials in exchange for fast-tracking shipments and allowing the company to skirt import regulations. The employees made the bribes through a customs broker and even went so far as to create fake invoices to cover their tracks. They created fake labels to disguise the payments, describing them as loading and delivery expenses, taxes, and the like. For more than 4 years, the company's employees in Argentina had plied customs officials with gifts, including cash, jewelry, expensive dresses, and even a handbag that retails for more than $10,000. Violating any number of laws that govern international trade, upon learning about the crimes, the leaders of Ralph Lauren Corporation sounded the alarm. They could have tried to cover it up, or at least have hired an expensive public relations company to put an elaborately crafted spin on the story, attempting to shield the company from any possible fallout. But instead, within days of learning about the bribes, Ralph Lauren executives contacted U.S. authorities to explain what they had found and to offer further assistance in the federal investigation of their own business dealings. By the time officials in the parent company caught on, the bribes had reached a total of nearly $600,000. In the end, Ralph Lauren Corporation was forced to pay penalties and fees of about $882,000 to the Justice Department and $732,000 to the Securities Exchange Commission. But the trade-off was worth it. Like the Marine who took responsibility for falling asleep and accepted his punishment, Ralph Lauren showed it could be trusted, and all its leaders had to do was tell the truth. The penalties may have cost the company $1.6 million, but had they not been honest, it would have cost the company their reputation and the trust they have built up with all those who work with them. Profit wasn't worth violating their integrity. Building trust requires nothing more than telling the truth. That's it. No complicated formula. For some reason, too many people or leaders of organizations fail to tell the truth or opt to spin something to appear that they did nothing wrong. Again, our primitive brain, evaluating everything in terms of survival, can see through that. This is why we so often don't trust politicians or big corporations. It has nothing to do with politics or big business, per se. It has to do with the way that politicians and the leaders of corporations choose to talk to us. Every single one of us should look at our managers or the leaders of the companies we work for and ask ourselves, would I want to be in a foxhole with you? And the managers and the leaders of the companies who rely on our hard work should in turn ask themselves, how strong is our company if the answer is no? A corporate lesson in telling the truth. Responding to backlash over a plan to charge customers $5 per month to use their debit cards to make purchases, Bank of America CEO Brian Moynihan proclaimed that the company had the right to make a profit. But such statements did little to quell the outrage felt by Bank of America customers across the country, who rallied together and vowed to close their accounts with the bank in protest. There were demonstrations in Los Angeles and Boston, and a woman in Washington collected 300,000 signatures in a show of solidarity against the North Carolina company. Further fueling the anger was the realization that this fee would not apply to all Bank of America account holders. The most affluent would be exempt. It was primarily average checking account customers, many of whom lived paycheck to paycheck, that would be affected. Bank of America leaders refused to divulge whether the number of account closings was higher than average following the announcement of their new policy. But on Tuesday, November 1st, 2011, exactly 33 days after the announcement, the bank issued a press release stating that they had decided to drop the plan. The leaders of large companies change their minds about decisions they make all the time. We expect that both people and companies will make mistakes and dumb choices. We're perfectly at peace with that. Making all the right decisions is not what engenders trust between people or between people and organizations. Being honest does. And being honest is exactly what Bank of America did not do when they decided to squash the idea of adding the fee. Bank of America first discussed the fee idea exclusively within business circles. And at the time, they were very clear and direct about their motivations and intentions. They, among other banks, were very vocal in their opposition to the Dodd-Frank Act, which put limits on how banks could charge fees following the financial crisis. The economics of offering a debit card have changed with recent regulations, a Bank of America spokeswoman said. It was widely reported and undisputed what these new fees were designed to do, to make up for the shortfall. Many banks were considering them. Bank of America was just the first to pull the trigger. The company said one thing to the financial community, but another to the public. When they formally revealed the plan, they actually had the audacity to say that the proposed fees were designed to, quote, help customers take full advantage of all the additional features like fraud protection. It's not even a good spin. That's like General Motors telling us that they're going to charge us $5 for every day we drive so that we can enjoy all the amazing features of their new car. But Bank of America customers didn't buy it. And so, in the face of public outrage, the bank changed their story. In a terse, four-sentence press release, they attempted to undo the damage they had done to themselves. Charlotte, North Carolina, November 1st, 2011. Business Wire. Bank of America will not implement debit usage fee. In response to customers' feedback and the changing competitive marketplace, Bank of America no longer intends to implement a debit usage fee. We have listened to our customers very closely over the last few weeks and recognize their concern for our proposed debit usage fee, said David Darnell, co-chief operating officer. Our customers' voices are most important to us. As a result, we are not currently charging the fee and will not be moving forward with any additional plans to do so. As a quick aside, quote, listening to customers usually happens before decisions are made and not after, but let us not trifle with such things. The reality is, what the bank's executives were actually listening to were the sounds of TV anchors chastising, picketers shouting outside their offices, and the money leaving their own accounts as customers reportedly closed theirs at uncomfortably higher than average levels. The only thing that Bank of America needed to do to build trust with their customers, and indeed with Wall Street, was to tell the truth. That's all. What if the press release announcing the reversal of their decision had sounded more like this? Charlotte, North Carolina, November 1st, 2011. Bank of America did not expect such a backlash. In response to customers' outcry and such a negative reaction in the press, Bank of America no longer intends to implement a debit usage fee. We are facing bigger economic challenges than we're used to, said David Darnell, co-chief operating officer. In an effort to boost our revenues, we thought we would try to implement a fee on debit card purchases. We expected some backlash, but not as much as we got. As a result, we will not be moving forward with any plans to charge any additional fees on debit card purchases for any of our customers. Further, we apologize for being short-sighted. We've certainly learned an important lesson about just how valuable our customers are and how much influence they can have over our financial standing. Even though their decision would still have been completely counter to customer interests, simply being honest about it would have done more to engender trust. Bank of America actually would have enhanced their reputation had they simply told the truth. The trust we have for an organization is built the same way as the trust we have for individuals. We need to know what to expect so we can better navigate our social bonds and know with whom we can make ourselves vulnerable and with whom we can express our weaknesses or turn our backs. It's not about winning or losing. All we want to know is if we can feel safe in a foxhole with you. Like the Marine who wanted to take responsibility for his actions only after he got caught, there is a disturbing trend in modern business to do the same. When a company gets caught with its hand in the cookie jar, do the leaders have a meeting to discuss how to mitigate or avoid punishment, or do they discuss the need to do the right thing based on a higher moral code, a code of ethics and integrity? Unlike the leaders of Ralph Lauren, the leaders of Bank of America chose to spin information to give the appearance of concern for their customers, when as plain as day, they were acting out of more concern for themselves. Say your boss tells you that the company you work for has suddenly lost its biggest account, and that as a result, you and everybody else in your department are going to have to take a pay cut, perhaps even a furlough as the company tries to regroup. Sure, it's going to be tough for a while, your boss says, but if you agree to stay on, you'll be compensated once things improve. Whom would you more likely believe with this information? An executive from Bank of America or an executive from the Ralph Lauren Corporation? As the Zen Buddhist saying goes, how you do anything is how you do everything.